on radio, on YouTube, streaming live on investtalk.com, and for our podcast subscribers, this is Invest Talk. Independent thinking, shared success. InvestTalk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. Here is KPP Financial Portfolio Manager, Luke Guerrero.
Good afternoon, fellow investors, and welcome back to InvestTalk. I'm your host, Luke Guerrero, and today is Wednesday, November 5th, 2025. It's pretty crazy. We are already in the month of November. This is the first time I have been with you this month, and we're well into it. Three trading days have already passed, and before you know it, my favorite holiday, Thanksgiving, will be right around the corner. But because this time of year, or rather, although this time of year, is where we tend to relax, take stock of the year, spend time with our families, it doesn't mean that we can lose focus. Because the news doesn't stop happening, markets don't stop moving, and your portfolios don't stop being affected. And so we here at InvestTalk have one objective for this podcast, for this radio program, that's to help make you a better and more informed investor. I want to help you understand market dynamics, and especially how those dynamics relate to your financial lives. In order to do that, I have a mixture of educational and actionable material to go over today. And of course, your contributions in the form of questions and comments are always an important part of the InvestTalk mission. Now, in just a bit, I'll talk a little about today's market performance and run down the show topics. But let's tackle this caller question now.
Hi, Justin or Luke. I'm calling today about Buckle, ticker symbol BKE. Found out about this company through you guys. Check in if you guys still hold it now, which is kind of nice. Let me know what you think about the company right now. Thank you very much.
Buckle, ticker BKE, is a specialty apparel retailer. So they have denim, casual footwear, and accessories. And overall, a very solid business. We do, in fact, still own it for our clients in one of our strategies. They have 440 stores across 42 states. Both brand name and private label items for, I would say, you know, across the spectrum, though they do focus a lot on the young adult segment. And margins are great. Operating margin, 19.8%, net margin, $1.218 billion in revenue in 2024. Now, Q2 2025, they did beat consensus both on revenue and on comparable store sales, up 7.3%. Online sales grew 17.7% in that quarter from the previous year. And at the same time, gross margins improved by about 50 basis points. Their online segment continues to meaningfully grow. And so that has led to a little bit of offsetting from the effect of what you've seen across the board in retail, which is falling sales in physical stores because of headwinds towards physical retail. Now, one issue, right, that you can see across retail is consumer spending risk. Apparel retail is particularly sensitive to macroeconomic shifts. They do still have physical stores. So although digital is growing, they still do depend in large part to those physical stores. And maybe the only other strike against this name is that growth has slowed down a little bit. But in income growth is still 13.4% over the past 5 years. Relative strength going back to 2019, still positive relative to the S&P 500. They're up 30.69% in the past 52 weeks, up 13.64% year to date, up nearly 15%, up 14.56 in the past 3 months. And they're trading only at 13 times price to forward-looking earnings, while also giving you a solid dividend around 2.4%. Overall, I think that in spite of the risks associated with fashion brands, with retail, if you're going to own a retail name and you've seen a bear out in performance this year and growth in net income, Buckle is a solid way to go. This is Buckle Inc., ticker BKE. We've got a lot of ground to cover in the next 45 minutes or so, and here's a little bit of what we have planned. My main focus point concerns this topic: housing market forecast 2026. what is coming next. We'll dive in about and take a look at where home prices, interest rates, and buyer demand are headed, and what that means for investors and homeowners. Also, news that, or rather the Supreme Court, appeared a bit skeptical today for the legal basis of the president's broad tariffs. So we'll touch on that a little bit. We'll also touch on how an expert suggests that AI may really deal a fatal blow to online ads. Should we have time at the end of the show, we'll touch on a recent story about how the U.S. might need to reduce flight traffic at 40 major airports due to the ongoing government shutdown. We also have some voicemail calls ready to play, including one on Lemonade Inc., ticker LMND, and another on Stride, ticker LRN. So well, some questions that came in from the comment section of the Desk Talk YouTube channel. Of course, I welcome your finance and investment questions now or anytime throughout the show. I think it's probably safe to say that you will be making several important investment decisions here in the fourth quarter. But before you do, I recommend you look at our new comprehensive 2025 Q4 Economic and Market Outlook Report. It is a free read and it's posted now at investtalk.com. Moving into a break, my phone lines are open. 888-99-CHART.
The prosperous future you envision for yourself and your family will not happen without strategic planning and definitive action.
Let's go to Brian in San Mateo looking at Roku.
And I wanted your take on the technical picture.
For the unprepared investor, market volatility around the world demonstrates risk. But opportunities wait for no one. And now may be the best time in years to invest wisely, to invest strategically.
What I would do is keep saving and look for other opportunities.
But how can you decide what sectors to avoid, which stocks to buy, and what might be the best price point?
I'm new to investing, and my friend Wesley recommended your podcast a year ago.
The next decisive step on your path to financial freedom begins with a Spotify search for Invest Talk. Listen live or download the free podcast.
Luke Guerrero is here, and he's ready with answers to your finance and investment questions. Call Invest Talk 888-99-CHART.
It's like we had a live call. Tom from Oregon, you got a question about tariffs. What's on your mind?
Yeah. Hey, Luke. Yeah. Thanks for taking my call. The question was kind of as the tariffs are now in the Supreme Court and they had the oral arguments today, I guess I was wondering, is there any way to know how much of the tariffs or, you know, if they're going to be ruled against or for, how much of that is being priced into the market? Because I guess today, looking at the overview of the oral arguments, they didn't go too well for the Trump administration. So I guess I'm just wondering, is there any way to tell how much of that is already priced in to what the market is doing?
That's a great question. You know, it's difficult to know what the aggregate expectations of all investors that we call the market is pricing in fully, especially because there is so much going on that complicates that picture. Now, we will dive into those oral arguments and why the Supreme Court is a bit skeptical and what that might mean a little bit later on in the show. But I think if you're trying to get an idea of how market participants may be viewing stories like this, although I am not a gambler and I would never endorse gambling, I think viewing prediction markets can give you a little bit of a hint. Now, before the Supreme Court oral arguments, I think the likelihood of the Supreme Court ruling favorably as judged by those who are throwing money in bets for it or against it was around 35 to 40%. After the oral arguments today, I think that dropped to around 20%. That was earlier in the day. I'm not sure where it stood after market close. And so, you know, for some time, I think there's been a belief in markets that this is a possible outcome. And you've seen that play out in those betting markets as well. But as always, you know, it's very difficult to know where prices are going to move, where markets are going to move, and how much of this is quote unquote priced in versus what these surprises might be. Either way this goes, right? This won't be the end of the story. There are certainly different ways that the president can try and exercise authority on tariffs. And so trying to kind of guess what the market is thinking here is a bit of a fool's errand, I would say. But your mind is in the right place. Certainly any decision will be big for markets. Thanks for the call. Speaking of markets, the Dow is up 48 basis points today. S&P 500 up 37 basis points. Russell 2000 up 1.54%. All major indices trading meaningfully higher. Those stocks did end a bit off of their best levels. Outperformers included semis, airlines, regional banks, machinery, ag chemicals, as well as auto suppliers. Underperformers included software, communication network names, MCOs, staple retailers, insurance, financial data, and waste. On the bond side, treasuries, a bit softer. You did see some curve steepening, yields up anywhere from 5 to 7 basis points. Dollar index, though, little changed as gold finished up another 80 basis points on the day. Crude oil really had a struggle, or really has been struggling this year, ended down 1.6% back below that $60 a barrel threshold. You know, overall, really not much specific behind some of these moves that we've seen. We had a pretty sizable pullback yesterday. There's been some angst around stretch valuations against big tech's concentration in major indices with respect to narrow breadth and overall return on investment on AI CapEx. And those overhangs really still are around. Not much has gone to push against those narratives, and so they're really not going to go away anytime soon. But at the same time, no real signs of panic. Look at VIX. Look at the dip buying narrative. Look at how resilient that has been. Retail buying across the board. And then on the positive side, you're also going to have positive seasonality heading in towards the end of the year. You're going to have a resumption of corporate buybacks. Those are all pretty bullish. And additionally, some skepticism from the Supreme Court in oral arguments in the IEEPA tariff case. Again, we'll dive into that a little bit later on. From a data perspective, pretty busy macro day after a slow start to the week. October ADP private payrolls printed at 42,000 above the 38,000 consensus. Looks like the bulk of the jobs, primarily in services industries and from a larger firm, so medium and small companies actually did shed jobs. October ISM services came in at 52.4, well above the 51 consensus and above September's 50. It's actually the highest headline since February. We also saw pretty strong growth in new orders. Looking ahead to the end of the week, nothing on the economic calendar for Thursday, though it is a pretty busy day of Fed speak. We got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 governors on the docket to speak on Thursday. And on Friday, we'll have the preliminary University of Michigan consumer sentiment number, as well as inflation expectations for November. That'll be out on Friday. See if we can fit in another quick question now.
Yes, Mark calling from San Diego. Thoughts on Disney, DIS. Is it overvalued, undervalued, or just fair value? Got a bunch of shares. Is wondering if it's time to hang on to it long term or let it go. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Let's take a look at Disney, the Walt Disney Corporation, probably one of the most famous IPs on planet Earth. They've been struggling since really the pandemic. Relative strength has been bad. Then they started investing a lot of money in their streaming platform. That led to significant losses from that segment, which did start to turn a profit at one point a couple, 3, 4 quarters ago. But at the same time, it hasn't fully recovered. It was trading at 190 in 2021, now currently trading at 111. Now, year to date, it is flat, up 1 basis point. Down 5.88% over the past 3 months, up 15.24% over the past year. And its relative valuation sits at about 17, near its low over the past 5 years. So I would not say it is overvalued, certainly not overvalued on a relative valuation basis. Now, revenue growth, which was 5.5% on an annualized basis, sitting just a bit below that, supposed to grow from $94 billion in revenue this year. Well, net income, kind of all over the place. In terms of realized net income, they actually fell from $10 billion to $4.9 billion. Again, a lot of that investment coming into play there. Though next year projected to be about $12.738 dollars, margins, kind of all over the place as well. I think Disney's big issue is economic headwinds mean that their largest source of revenue, theme parks selling their IP to people in the forms of toys and dolls and all of those things, could really suffer in those times. So there's a reason why, technically speaking, it doesn't look great. For now, I certainly would not be buying more of Disney. Thanks for the call. Headed to new breaks, still to come, my main focus point and more answers to your questions. I encourage you to call now, 888-99-CHART.
InvestTalk Innovators. Justin Klein and Luke Guerrero interview company leaders, founders, and visionaries. So head over to the InvestTalk YouTube channel and look for InvestTalk Innovators. Luke Guerrero is here now and ready to answer your finance and investment questions. Call InvestTalk 888-99-CHART.
Now, my main focus point today is about the housing market, and more specifically, what could be coming next in 2026. Now, the once scorching housing market cooled a bit this summer. What did that do? Well, it gave buyers some relief as price growth slowed, inventories rose, and mortgage rates started to ease. It offered a glimpse of potentially a more balanced fall and winter. But despite these tailwinds, many buyers understandably remain cautious. They're holding off in hopes of even lower mortgage rates. But experts are warning, and I tend to agree, that waiting too long, if you are in a position to buy a home, could certainly backfire. The Federal Reserve's second 2025 rate cut lowered the federal funds rate to a range of 3.75 to 4. And that's injected a bit of optimism into the market, indirectly pulling mortgage rates to their lowest levels in nearly a year. But some economists are a bit cautious. Affordability remains the key hurdle here, as lower rates have now spurred refinances more than new home purchases. You're not seeing these new buyers entering the markets in spite of rates being lower because prices, mostly associated with new inventories, remains very high. Now, national home price growth did slow pretty sharply to just 1.6% year over year in August, and that is the weakest gain that we've seen in 2 years, and it has, in fact, even lagged inflation, meaning that there's been a rare inflation-adjusted decline in housing wealth if you look at housing on a broad national basis. But that slowdown has been very uneven. Once hot, no pun intended, cities like Miami and Phoenix, getting a bit cooler, while these industrial and urban centers like Chicago and New York, getting a bit stronger. Even so, it is unlikely that you get some sort of 2008 style housing crash, right? Tight supply, record homeowner equity, nearly $36 trillion nationwide. That provides you with a sturdy floor underneath those prices. And foreclosures are rising only modestly, up 20% from last year, and remain well below those pre-pandemic levels, with that strong equity allowing many struggling owners to sell before losing their homes. On the sales front, existing home transactions ticked up about 1.5% in September, while pending home sales held steady, suggesting that there's a bit of modest improvement as mortgage rates fall and affordability slowly recovers. Inventory's up about 33% from a year ago, as the quote-unquote lock-in effect begins to ease, particularly in overheated markets like Florida and Texas. But at the same time, supply remains still tight in the Midwest and the Northeast. A sustained recovery will probably depend on both higher inventory and stable mortgage rates near the mid-5% range, levels that could reignite healthy market activity without sparking another price spike. That's the key here. Balanced effects. For buyers, this has never been more true. Focus on affordability and long-term value rather than trying to time the market. If you're a seller, Given where prices have been, if you're trying to find liquidity, now is a time to start pricing competitively. Understand, housing markets tend to, in a way, move very slowly, then quickly, all at once. But as rates are starting to come down, there's hope for buyers yet that that housing prices will become more affordable. Earlier in the podcast, we played a question about BKE. Next, how about one about NKE?
Hi, this is Lily from Big Bear again. Calling in regards to the Nike stock, NKE. Just your thought, is it a good time to buy it? It's pretty low for Nike. Any comments or recommendations are appreciated. Thank you.
Nike is a very well-known athletic footwear, apparel, accessories, equipment company. And if you look at the way a Nike swoosh looks, right, it goes down and then up and to the right. Well, this chart does the exact opposite. It's going down and to the right. It has been a really rough time coming out of the pandemic as costs, input costs have gone up. Margins have been pressured. And so a company that designs and manufactures a lot of its things overseas has understandably had a rough time. Now, there is a turnaround strategy. They're attempting a new CEO, refresh leadership. They're really doing this sport offense focus, right? Clearing inventory, refocusing on their core sports, trying to improve that wholesale discipline. But it's going to take time. And there's a reason why the company's down 20% over the past 52 weeks, why sales revenue is, at least from 2024 into 2025, fallen dramatically, supposed to, through 2026, maybe pick up a little bit, though, barely, from $46.4 billion to $46.7 billion. Net income, though, still supposed to fall. I'm not seeing much that is showing a successful turnaround yet. And from a momentum perspective, it doesn't look great either. So although Nike looks cheap, and it is, trading at 6.7 times price to book, well below where it's been, doesn't mean now's the time to buy. That is Nike, ticker NKE. Headed into yet another break. When we come back, we have plenty to talk about and hopefully some more live calls from you. Give me a call at 888-99-CHART.
The calls are free. The unbiased answers are free. So what are you waiting for? Call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
On the next InvestTalk, we'll look into this topic, gold's enduring role from ancient coins to the Bitcoin era. From the gold standard to modern Bitcoin comparisons, we will explore why gold still matters in the digital age and how it fits into today's portfolio. That's tomorrow. But now, let's roll with a fresh listener question.
Hi, InvestTalk. This is Dana calling from Massachusetts. I was calling about ticker symbol LNR, which is Stride, Inc. This was a name that I picked up a couple weeks ago, thinking that it was a strong fundamental company. Earnings came out, I think it was last week, and it dropped 50%. And that was due to, I guess, an issue with one of their platform upgrades. There was a decrease in user count, and they had to cut their expectations moving forward. What would you do with a position like this if you lost 50%? And I listen to the podcast. Thanks, guys. Bye.
Ticker, it's actually LRN, is Stride, Inc. It is a technology-enabled education company specializing in K-12 career learning and alternative education. It is the number one driver of its performance right now, up until a couple days ago, is really this strong growth in its career learning segment. It's about 36% of its business. Actually, if you combine the mid and adult segment, it's about 39% of its business. And it's seen some pretty rapid expansion. One report cited that their revenue increased 26.4% up until this most recent quarter. Enrollment growth looked pretty strong as well. And the company upgraded full year guidance. Now, on October 24th, the company's trading at $152 per share. Now it's trading at $71.90. Price to earnings reaching near its 5-year low, as is price to book value. And so some of that revenue growth that you've seen, 18.2% on an annualized basis going back 6 years, doesn't look too hot right now given the most recent quarterly performance report in October of this year. There's also talkings of, well, maybe they're going to be investigated a little bit for securities fraud, dealing with some of the issues that you're seeing here. And so anytime there's some of those issues associated with these types of companies, anytime you see this massive drop off here, that is not a sign that you have a good deal here. And so don't catch this falling knife. Do not catch this falling knife. That is Stride Inc., ticker LRN. Let's keep things going. Here's another voice bank question. This one came in earlier from Miami.
Hi, Justin and Luke. This is Matt in Miami. I had a question in regards to Lemonade, LMND. I got referred to it by a friend a few months back because he really liked it with its incorporation of AI and using different types of insurances. So running quotes for auto, for life insurance, home insurance, renter's insurance. Seems interesting how they're doing that and they're really improving their profitability, but they never have made money. And I still see it as an egregious price at where it's at, even before they had a 30% run up very recently. Wondering if I'm missing anything here and would love to hear your opinion on the podcast. Thank you and have a great day.
Lemonade is a tech enabled insurance company. So they use AI, they use digital platforms to sell renters, homeowners, pet, car, and life insurance. And it has had some pretty decent improvement to its underwriting metrics. That's really what has driven its performance over the past year. It's up 214% over the past 52 weeks, up 114% year to date, up 64.26% over the past 3 months. I have heard that the experience with this company is pretty solid. I heard that from Justin, who actually uses it for pet insurance for his dog. But just because the experience is enjoyable, you get matched with it, doesn't mean that it's a good investment. Now, the price has moved phenomenally over the past year. My concern, my primary concern, is that it still hasn't found a way to turn a profit in spite of all of this growth. So for me, for now, I would be more likely to sit on the sidelines given the potential volatility in this name here. Its 52-week beta is 1.78%. That's pretty darn high. That is Lemonade Inc., ticker LMND. Thanks for the call. What should we talk about now? Ah, yes. The U.S. Supreme Court. Hearing what could be a pivotal case today, testing whether or not the president's use of emergency powers to impose these sweeping global tariffs is allowed. It's a move that could redefine presidential authority over trade. At issue is the president's reliance on the International Emergency Economic Powers Act, or IEEPA, to justify these tariffs, which are aimed at rebalancing trade and punishing, as he puts it, nations tied to fentanyl trafficking. The challenge brought by American businesses and 12 U.S. states argues that the tariffs overstepped their executive authority and have caused significant financial harm. A defeat would really undercut the backbone of Trump's, quote, reciprocal tariff policy, a hallmark of his economic agenda, and jeopardize nearly $50 billion in tariff revenue collected this year. Now, the president has framed this case, as expected, in existential terms, calling it life or death for our country, insisting the tariffs are vital to national security and economic independence. The Solicitor General, who argues the government's cases in front of the Supreme Court, John Sauer, defended the policy, saying massive trade deficits have brought the nation to the brink of an economic and national security catastrophe. Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent attended the hearing, expressed optimism, saying the government had made a powerful case and brushing off questions about refunding tariff revenue. Some conservative justices, including Sam Alito and Brett Kavanaugh, seemed pretty receptive to the administration's arguments that an economic emergency justified the tariff. But elsewhere, the chief judge, and Justice Neil Gorsuch voiced some pretty sharp concerns. They warned against executive overreach and the erosion of Congress's constitutional power to tax. They weren't the only ones. Justice Amy Coney Barrett pressed the government on the scope of its action, questioning why allies like Spain and France were targeted under a supposed national security rationale. The outcome of this case could define the balance of power between Congress and the presidency. Once a power is given to the executive, it is hard for the Congress to claim it back. A decision is likely to determine whether the president can continue using emergency powers as the legal engine for his aggressive second-term trade war. As I mentioned in that earlier question, you look at prediction markets, they are projecting a pretty low probability based on people's bets that the Supreme Court will rule in favor of the president. Either way, no matter where it goes, it'll certainly be a market-moving event. How we dip back into the InvestTalk listener voice bank for a question from North Carolina.
Hello, this is Jack in North Carolina. I was looking at a company, EQT, a natural gas energy company. Looked like something that I might be wanting to move into now or in the near term. Wanted to get your thoughts on this company and look forward to hearing your response on the podcast. Thanks.
EQT is a natural gas production company. So they engage in the provision of supply, transmission, and distribution of natural gas. $35 billion market cap company. Only got about $9 billion in long-term debt, and revenue has grown pretty well over the past several years. Projected to go from $5.22 billion to $8.29 billion from 2024 into 2025. It is a vertically integrated company trying to, as their mission says, deliver affordable, reliable, cleaner energy to the world. Now, in Q2, they beat estimates with adjusted earnings per share of $45 versus their consensus of about $42, and revenue significantly above forecasts as well. They have been trying and have been at the forefront of optimizing upstream and midstream integration in the Appalachian Basin and trying to find more affordable ways to get natural gas, not just to markets in North America, but internationally as well. Now, we hold this name. We have held this name back from when it was trading at, oh, I don't even know. It's been forever, $30 a share. And we did trim a little bit of it up at 60 just because it seemed to be a bit overweight, but we didn't sell out of all of it. We're still holding it at a pretty solid weight in one of our strategies, and that's because we think that natural gas is an important fuel and that this company is at the forefront of the business. Now, that being said, right, you do have some risks here. You have commodity price risk. Natural gas prices tend to be volatile. So a sustained dip in gas pricing could hurt their margins. It could hurt their cash flow. I mean, their net margins projected to be 21.9% this upcoming year. There's a reason why it's up nearly 50% at 49.15 in the past 52 weeks. And it's still only trading at price to forward-looking earnings about 13.3 times. And so we have held this name for a while. We will continue to hold this name. We like this name. That is EQT Corporation, ticker EQT. Thanks for the call. Now, AI does have the ability to revolutionize a lot. And at the FT Financial Times Future of AI Summit, one man who is instrumental in the creation of the World Wide Web issued a pretty stark warning that generative AI could dismantle the multi-billion dollar advertising model that has powered the internet for decades. In his speech, he explained that if a large language model starts consuming web content on behalf of users rather than humans visiting pages directly, what's going to have to happen to ad revenue? The ad-based business model could completely fall apart. That's because digital advertising depends on human engagement, clicks, views, interactions. And large language models, well, they bypass those entirely when generating answers straight from data. That warning strikes at the heart of some of the largest companies on planet Earth, Google, Meta, whose fortunes have long rested on massive ad networks driving trillions in market value. For the first time in a generation, Google's dominance in search is being challenged. Now their search volume is still growing, but ChatGPT and other AI tools, they're offering conversational ad-free alternatives. And Google sees this. They pivoted fast. They rolled out their AI mode in their new search engine and apps to provide chatbot-style answers, even if that risks cannibalizing its own ad revenue. Now, Berners-Lee, who was the man instrumental in the World Wide Web, noted that much of the internet assumes a human reader, not an algorithmic one. And once that changes, well, then the financial foundation of online media, that starts to crack. In a way, though, he expressed that maybe AI could serve as a reset button, an opportunity to rethink privacy, rethink data ownership, and overall rethink the user experience. In spite of this warning, I mean, thus far, the ad model's been pretty remarkably resilient. Google, or rather Alphabet, just reported a record $100 billion in quarterly revenue, with both growth from not just their cloud computing segment, but also from their ad business. Meta also posted very strong results, $51.2 billion in Q3 revenue, up 26% year over year. Mozilla President Mark Sermon told the summit that web is at a potential crossroads, urging the industry to use this disruption to create more privacy-respecting, user-centered business models. One caution, one warning, not just for ads, but big brands, payment processors, face an existential moment. AI not only threatens their dominance, but could make them subordinate to the very models consuming their data. Now, we may not have time to answer it, but you know what? We can at least start to play it. So let's hit another caller question now.
I just had a question about Pool Corp, ticker POOL. Wondering what your guys' thoughts are. And I was just wondering, is this a good time to buy or if you guys can recommend a good price point or what your thoughts were. Thanks. Happy day. Bye.
Let's take a look at Pool Corp, ticker POOL, Pool Corporation. Unsurprisingly, wholesale distribution of swimming pool supplies, equipment, and related leisure products. Geographically, it gets 93% of its revenue from the United States. Also, unsurprisingly, had a pretty solid 2020 and 2021 in the pandemic when a lot of people were spending a lot of money and a lot of time at their homes. Year to date, down 25.76%, though. Down 31.48% over the past 52 weeks. Net sales only grew 1% year over year. Gross margin improved a little bit, but earnings per share only rose 4%. Annual earnings guidance also was revised a little bit down. They are benefiting from, I imagine, pool maintenance, repair costs, and that is a large majority of their revenue, but, or rather, that is a small amount of their revenue, when a majority of the revenue really comes from new pool builds, which appears to have slowed. So taking a look at this, you know, it's trading at 22 times price to forward-looking earnings. Chart doesn't look great. Momentum looks pretty poor. Down another 2% today. The time may come for you to add this to your portfolio, but I don't think that time is today. It is Pool Corporation, ticker POOL. Headed into a break, our final break. So get your questions in now at 888-99-CHART.
Every investor is working to build a secure financial future. The more you learn about how the market works, the better your chances for success. InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Hey, good afternoon. This is Zach calling from Kentucky. Wanted to get your thoughts on Boston Beer Company, ticker symbol SAM, S-A-M. I love their products, but their stock has been an absolute dog lately. Just curious at what point you would consider picking some shares up. I think they'll eventually recover and would be looking to hold long term, but also don't want to catch a falling knife. Thanks for your insight, and I'll listen for your answer on the podcast. Have a good day.
Ticker SAM is the Boston Beer Company. They produce and sell alcoholic beverages, including Truly Hard Seltzer, Twisted Tea, Sam Adams, Angry Orchard Hard Cider, and Dogfish Head Craft Brewery. Small cap, $2.2 billion market cap, long-term debt, not much to speak of, about $31 million in debt. But they've had some volume pressures. Q4 2024 shipments fell slightly, while revenue rose 2.2%. But what you don't want to see is shipments falling. Overall, the trend is not great. They had a high revenue of $2.09 billion in 2022. That's projected to fall to $1.964 billion this year. Same time, net income hasn't really grown that much compared to their local high of $192 million down to $103 million in 2025. Margins really haven't recovered post-pandemic. 2020, net margin about 11%. Now it's about 5.3%. So because this stock has really not been doing well, and I don't just mean over the past 52 weeks when it's down 30.2%. I don't just mean year-to-date where it's down 30.18%. It's underperformed the S&P 500 since 2020. So get this. These are the past years from 2025 to 2021. Underperformed by 45, 36, 19, 15, 76. Growth is the name of the game here. And there just doesn't seem to be much here. There's also potential tariff cost impacts, which can be compressing margins. Aluminum can tariffs. Other associated cost inflations. Add on that people are just drinking less. Seem to be a lot of headwinds. And so although I do like their products as well, I think that there is just too much going on for at least in the short to medium term for them to overcome. So for now, I'd stay away from Boston Beer Company, ticker SAM. Before we head off, news, the Federal Aviation Administration announced it will order a 10% reduction in airline traffic across 40 major airports as the government shutdown strains an already fragile air travel system. Sean Duffy, Transportation Secretary, said the move, which begins Friday, is a safety measure to relieve pressure on air traffic controllers now working without pay. It's because of a government shutdown in effect since October 1st, which has deepened staffing shortages among key transportation personnel, leading to longer security lines and mounting flight delays. Hopefully, he says, the traffic reduction will stabilize operations. And so you can't just do this by yourself, right? There's a partnership here. Airlines will be asked to scale back their flight schedules, which could ripple through the system and impact travelers with delays, cancellations, fewer available seats. FAA Administrator Brian Bedford confirmed the plan will also restrict space launches to ease the burden on overworked air traffic centers. Nearly 500 travel industry companies and organizations have warned Congress of impending chaos if the shutdown continues, citing lost revenue, growing frustration from consumers as well. And so as the standoff in Washington drags on and we head closer to the holiday season, travelers are being warned. Expect longer lines, expect fewer flights, and a turbulent path ahead unless Congress moves quickly to restore government funding. I'm Luke Guerrero, and this completes another episode of Invest Talk. Justin and I thank you for joining and encourage you to tell at least one friend, one family member about our free podcast downloads. If they're interested, you can get them at iTunes and Spotify. While you're at it, please be sure to leave us a rate and review. As always, if today's show made you think about your own financial picture, your investments, your taxes, your retirement, and you know what, whether it's all really working together, if you fully understand everything that is going on, we'd love to chat. At KPP, we offer no-cost portfolio reviews to help bring a little bit of clarity and a little bit of confidence to your financial life. If that sounds interesting, head over to investtalk.com and click on the portfolio review button. Once again, it is free and confidential. Independent thinking, shared success. This is Invest Talk. Good night.
Invest Talk is a trademark of KPP Financial. Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them. Specifically, nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell security. Because such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor firm which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. Thank you for listening, and your comments and questions are welcome on our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART.